Well, get ready for the next couple hours as we're going to talk with Rob Schwartz. A couple of his works, Your Soul's Plan, Discovering the Real Meaning of the Life You Planned Before You Were Born, and his newest book is Your Soul's Gift, The Healing Power of the Life You Planned Before You Were Born. I'm looking forward to this. Rob Schwartz, next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Rob Schwartz is a hypnotist, offers past life soul regressions and between life soul regressions as well, in which people can discover what they had planned before they were born. And I find that fascinating. He lectures internationally at various psychic, spiritual, and life communications conferences. And here he is on Coast to Coast with his works, Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift. Rob, I'm looking forward to this. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, George. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
How did you get involved in this kind of work?
George, for me, the path to writing Your Soul's Plan and then later Your Soul's Gift, and your listeners can read large excerpts for free at yoursoulsplan.com, started in Chicago back in mid-2003. I was self-employed at that time as a marketing and communications consultant, basically doing different forms of corporate writing, which I found to be tremendously, tremendously unfulfilling. You know, I used to say to people at the time that I had the feeling if I fell off the face of the earth, none of my clients would even know that I was gone. they would just plug somebody else into my role and carry right along.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, I had this distinct sense that there was a higher calling or a higher purpose to my life. I just didn't know what it was and wasn't sure how to figure out what it was. So coming, as I do, from a very conventional background, I tried conventional approaches at first. I took the Myers-Briggs inventory, talked to friends and family. None of this really shed any light on the matter. And so on May 7th of 2003, I did something that is now commonplace, but which at that time I had never done before. And that is I had a session with the psychic medium. She introduced me to the concept of spirit guides, explaining that a spirit guide is a highly evolved non-physical being with whom we plan our lives before we're born, and who then gets us through our lives after we get here. And through this particular medium, I was actually able to talk with my guides. Now, they said a lot of amazing things to me that day, one of which was they said, you planned your life, including your biggest challenges, before you were born. And I will tell you, I just shook my head and I said, well, why in the world did I do that? And they said, you did this for purposes of spiritual growth.
Huh.
Now, I might not have believed anything that I was hearing, except that the guides knew literally everything about me. They knew what my challenges had been. They were able to tell me very clearly why I had planned them. And so this gave them total credibility, of course. So by the time that session was over, I was amazed at what I had heard. And in the weeks after the session, I thought about this information constantly. The effect that it had on me was that it allowed me to review the course of my life, and for the first time in many instances, see deeper meaning or deeper purpose to the most challenging things that had happened. For me, this created a profound inner healing, and I realized I was onto a concept that could create a similar kind of healing for other people. It was at that point that I first started to think about writing a book on the subject. Then, over a period of time, I came into contact with some mediums and channels who, in one way or another, could access what somebody had planned before they were born. So in working with these people, we were able to examine people's pre-birth plans. We looked at the pre-birth planning of all the most common challenges one faces in life, and then I put those into the two books. So the work is intended to give meaning to challenges that to the average person might seem not to have any deeper meaning, to allow people to heal and to help people awaken, by which I mean come into some awareness that you are more than the body, more than the personality, more than your thoughts and feelings, that you are, in fact, a very courageous and eternal being who planned the most difficult experiences that you have in your life.
Do we seek out our parents, Rob?
We do. And it's by mutual consent, the parents agreeing to be our parents. What I find in my work, George, is that we are members of soul groups. A group would be 15 up to sometimes 70 people, who we reincarnate with repeatedly, playing every conceivable role.
We switch around, don't we?
Sorry, George?
We switch around.
We switch around, that's right. So you and the members of your soul group will take turns being mother and daughter, father and son, brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
best of friends, even mortal enemies who in some lifetimes kill each other. But at the soul level, there's absolutely no judgment of any of these roles. They're simply seen as tools for evolution. So we seek to experience everything, and the members of our soul group make that possible.
The friends we have, the loved ones we have in our physical life, generally then, and I've always believed this too, without really any evidence on my own, that the people you're associated with in your life, the really close people, are with you in those other soul groups. Was that pretty accurate on my part?
For the most part, the people who play the most significant roles in your life, including the closest friends, they are members of your soul group. Now, occasionally, you will choose to work with somebody who is in another soul group, maybe a less evolved soul group, maybe a slightly more evolved soul group. And there can be different reasons for doing this. But for the most part, you cycle back with the same people again and again and again. And what you're doing is fostering each other's growth and evolution over the course of many lifetimes.
That's exciting. Now, when you became a hypnotist dealing with past life soul regressions, did you encounter any really strange past lives from people?
You know, there hasn't been anything that I didn't expect. That might seem strange to the average person who's not familiar with hypnotic regression. But what I see, again, is that people are playing every conceivable role. So they have lifetimes that are what we would call very common, very ordinary, lifetimes as royalty, lifetimes as prominent figures who make great contributions to the world. And in each of these lifetimes, they're learning different lessons. Now, what are the lessons? Well, a lot of it revolves around cultivating certain qualities that I've given the name divine virtues to. And there's a list of about 28 that I work with in spiritual guidance sessions that I do with clients. These are qualities like compassion, empathy, patience, forgiveness, unconditional love. A lot of the pre-birth planning of life challenges revolves around a soul-level desire to deepen in the divine virtues, and then having done that, to turn them outward in service to others. Service to others is a big component of literally every single pre-birth plan I've ever looked at.
Well, with Rob Schwartz, his work, his latest one is called Your Soul's Gift. He also has Your Soul's Plan. Explain to us, Rob, what a soul is.
A soul, as I understand it, George, is a portion of God, a portion of divine energy. And then the personality, that would be you, me, and everyone listening tonight, is a portion of the soul's energy placed into a physical body. So the soul is a vast, multi-dimensional energy, and it takes a very small portion of that energy, puts it into a physical body, and as I understand it, the soul has multiple physical lifetimes going on concurrently. The soul also has multiple non-physical lifetimes going on concurrently. From our perspective, which is limited by the information we can take in through the five senses, it's very hard to comprehend this. But the soul is involved with a part of all of these lives that are happening simultaneously, and the lifetimes actually impact each other. So there are parallel dimensions, as I understand it. There's likely to be more than one George Norrie in more than one physical dimension. And what you do here in this dimension impacts and informs the other Georges, and what they do impacts and informs your life here.
Well, with all that has been happening in these past lives with people, does it affect them in their current life? So things that I went through in the past, does it affect me today?
It does. A very simple example would be, let's say that somebody has a fear of heights. So in a past life soul regression, they might go back to a past lifetime, let's say in medieval Europe, in which they were standing at the top of a castle and somebody pushed them off and they fell to their death. So what happens in a hypnotic regression is a process called abreaction, which is just a fancy clinical term, meaning that when you go back and re-experience the past life origin of a current life issue, very often partial or sometimes even complete healing occurs. We don't really understand how abreaction works. We simply know that it does work. So that person who has the fear of heights in the current lifetime, by re-experiencing the past life origin of that fear of heights, there's a good chance there will be partial or maybe complete healing of the fear of heights in the current lifetime.
Rob, are you concerned at all about some people's past lives? I mean, is everybody going in the right direction, or are there some people going down the wrong path?
Well, you know, George, when we use the term right or the term wrong, this is from a very human perspective, meaning that there's often judgment involved. What I see in my work, and this comes more from the work in what I call a between-life soul regression, in which a person can talk to the Council of Elders and find out what their pre-birth plan is, there's really no judgment by the soul of the personality. Having said that, there are people who in some lifetimes go in a direction of less expansion or less evolution, but that's all part of the process. And the soul never judges the personality for going in what we might consider to be the wrong direction. You know, the plans that we set up for ourselves before we come into birth, it's very common not to complete them fully in a certain lifetime. And if we don't, the soul doesn't judge the personality and say, well, you went in the wrong direction during that lifetime. The soul simply says, well, let's try again and let's continue the process. So there's absolutely no judgment.
The difference between the souls that are, well, they've been there. Are they're old souls and they're newer souls, right?
That's true, yes.
So the older souls, the ones that have been here, gone, how many times does it take where they don't have to keep coming back again?
Yeah, as I understand it, there's a tremendous variability in the answer to that question. It's a lot like the difference between being a slow learner and a fast learner at school. And again, that's a human judgment. The soul has no such judgment. But there are people who learn the intended lessons very quickly and move on to what we would call a higher dimension. And then I think for the average person, there are at least several hundred lifetimes before we do that. But there can also be up to thousands of lifetimes before we go on to a higher dimension. It all just depends on how quickly we master the lessons.
Are these souls truly learning during each lifetime?
That's an interesting question, because from a certain perspective, it's actually more accurate to say that they're remembering things that they knew before they came into body and had the sort of amnesia that they have, that we have, about our life plans and about our eternal identities. So one of the things I've asked in the channeling sessions I've done for Your Soul's Plan and Your Soul's Gift is, why do we choose to forget? Why do we create amnesia when we come into body about our life plan and about our eternal identities? And what it seems to boil down to, George, is that the forgetting and then the process of remembering while in body leads to what you could call a more profound self-knowing. It would be almost like, let's say, when you're done with tonight's shows, you leave the studio, you're walking down the sidewalk, and God forbid, a tree branch falls on your head, knocks you unconscious, and when you come to, you don't remember that you're George Nouri. Well, what would happen from that point forward? Most likely, everybody who loves you would gather every email you've ever sent, every photograph you're in, every letter that's been written by you and to you.
To try to remind you who you are.
Exactly. They would try to remind you who you are. Now, you, lacking memory, would pay incredibly close attention to every detail of everything put in front of you. So by the time the process was over, it might be correct to say that you would actually, in some ways, know yourself better than you did before you had amnesia. Roughly speaking, that's what is happening in the process of an incarnation on Earth.
Even though I may still have the amnesia.
That's right. But you would have all of this knowledge that had been presented to you, which you paid particularly close attention to, and which you may not have been paying attention to or even remembering before you had the amnesia.
Now tell us more about how we plan our lives before we're born.
What happens, as I understand it, is that the soul creates the life plan. Then the soul creates the personality, which again is a small portion of the soul's energy. The personality is then informed by the soul and by spirit guides of what the life plan will be. At that point, the vast majority of people agree to the life plan because they sense that it's based on great unconditional love and great wisdom. There is, however, a small percentage of people who say, I don't know, this might be a little bit too much. Those people are then reassured by their soul and by their spirit guides that this plan is doable and it is, in fact, for your and the highest and greatest good. At that point, the vast majority of those who had initially expressed doubts agree to the plan. But there's a small percentage of those people who still say, I don't think so, I think this is too much. And if you do say that, your free will is respected and honored, and at that point, the life plan is revised to make it a little bit less challenging.
Could you make a mistake? Could this soul make a mistake and end up going somewhere it doesn't want to go?
I have not seen that. I can't say categorically that it's not possible, but I have never seen that in my work. When I do between-life soul regressions with people, and they transition back into spirit at the end of a past lifetime, generally they're met by one of their spirit guides. We talk to the guide briefly about why they were shown that particular past life and how it affected the plan for the current lifetime. And then usually the guide will take the person to the Council of Elders. These are the very wise, loving, and highly evolved beings who oversee reincarnation on Earth. And so we ask the Council, what is this person's life plan? Why did they pick these particular challenges? What are the pre-birth intentions, the things that they hope to accomplish in this particular incarnation? I have never, not even once, had the Council say, you know what, a mistake was made.
Yeah.
This soul did not intend to be here in body at this time. That has
recall the soul, right?
Exactly. But it's just never happened.
Do the souls ever get to a point where this perfection stops, and we used to call it the heavenly realm, but what does it all mean, Rob? What is this entire effort to reincarnate, to come back, to perfect? What are we trying to accomplish?
I think basically what we're doing is to use the language that comes through in some of the channelings for the books. What we are doing is shedding density. We are releasing lower vibrational energies, things like anger or impatience, anything that we would call a so-called negative energy, and we're rising in vibration. We're moving to a point of greater love. Another term that is often used in the channeling sessions is that we're clarifying. So we're moving from a mixture of what we would call light and dark and clarifying to greater light, ever greater light. On and on and on.
Rob Schwartz, our special guest, both books, Your Soul's Plan, Your Soul's Gift, his website, yoursoulsplan.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. When you've done past life regressions, have you ever been scared with the things that were coming out of the person's mouth?
Occasionally that happens. Only because the past life that is being described is something that involved a lot of suffering, and from a human point of view is therefore a little bit frightening. For example, I've had clients who have gone back to past lives during World War II in which they were in concentration camps.
Ah, okay.
So, of course, from a human perspective, it is a little bit scary to hear about that and to hear about the person's suffering. But something that I've learned in doing this work, George, is that at the soul level, we have a very different perspective about suffering, and it's not something that is viewed as frightening or quote-unquote bad. We realize very acutely from the non-physical realm that a lifetime is extremely brief. You know, it's here and gone like a clap of thunder. We also realize that no one is permanently harmed by anything that happens here, and we also realize that the wisdom that comes out of a lifetime, including one of great suffering, becomes part of the soul literally for all eternity. So when people express disbelief that anyone would plan a great challenge or a great suffering prior to birth, I remind them of this perspective, which they themselves knew before they came into
birth. All right, hold on, Rob. We're going to take this quick break, then we're going to come back with more later on tonight. We'll take phone calls, and if you've ever had a past life regression, gosh, I'd love to hear about that too. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Rob Schwartz with us. Rob, during your work, You said that you came across something about suicides, which you believed could have been the most important aspect of anything you've discovered. Tell me about this.
You know, George, when I'm writing a book, I try to be very aware of the information that crosses my path, because I know that if there's something I'm supposed to become aware of so that I can put it in a book and help other people with it, Spirit will find a way to put that information in front of me. And this happened during the time that I was writing Your Soul's Gift. I was working on a chapter about suicide. It's a very poignant story of a woman whose only child hangs himself in their own home shortly after he graduated from high school, and she actually found the body and had to cut him down. And we were working with Pamela Krabbe, who's a very talented channel in the Netherlands. She channels Jesus, and we were talking in a channeling session with Jesus about the topic of suicide. And what he shared with me and what we discussed is that every suicide preventable by outside forces was prevented. That's a direct quote from him, and I'll say it again. Every suicide preventable by outside forces was prevented. And what he means is this. If a suicidal person has the slightest openness or willingness to change their mind, Spirit knows that, and Spirit stages an intervention. The intervention could be almost anything. A bird could fly by and distract the person so they don't go through with them, or somebody walks by and smiles and suddenly they feel better. Occasionally, and I know someone that this happened to, an angel will actually take on human physical form and intercede and prevent the suicide from happening. But one way or another, Spirit knows and Spirit stages an intervention. So therefore, every suicide preventable by outside forces was prevented. This means that if you have lost a loved one, there was literally nothing you could have done to prevent the suicide. Because again, if the loved one had been open to changing their mind, Spirit would have known and would have staged the intervention. So what Jesus encourages readers to do, and those who have lost a loved one to suicide, is take whatever guilt or self-blame you feel and set it down and step away from it. That's what your loved one would want, because there was literally nothing you could have done to prevent the suicide. Literally nothing.
Yes. And there is a lot of guilt associated with that.
There is a lot of guilt, but the guilt stems from thoughts like, if only I had done this, or only if I had not done that.
Right, or I saw this sign, but I didn't act on it.
Exactly, but Jesus tells us it would not have made any difference because there was no openness or willingness for the person to change their mind, and had there been, the intervention would have occurred regardless of what you did or did not do. So just let go of the blame, let go of the guilt. There was nothing you could have done.
How important is it for everybody to go through a past life regression?
I think it's potentially extremely important, and even more so to do the between lives regression, because it gives you a sense of who you are at the soul level. You know, again, when we're here in body, we're very identified with the personality in the current lifetime. You are identified as George Noory. I myself identified as Rob Schwartz. I believe that I am a hypnotist, I believe that I am an author and a teacher, and yes, within the context of this lifetime, those things are true. But that's not my eternal identity. On the soul level, I've had many, many lives, I've been different people in those lives, and I have certain unique qualities, a certain unique energy signature or vibration at the soul level. And so when someone does a past life regression and sees a past life, or when they see their eternal identity at the soul level in a between-life session, it's a profound awakening. You know, people come out of those sessions and they say, I understand now who I am. I understand now what my life is all about.
Some of them break down and cry too, don't they?
There are a lot of tears. Yeah, it's a very profound and moving session.
Is there a danger there for anybody? I mean, can you ever get to a point, if you're a hypnotist, that you couldn't pull somebody out of being hypnotized, that they got stuck in it?
You know, that actually is not possible. And something that I tell people before we ever start a session is, you are fully in control. You can end the session at any moment simply by choosing to open your eyes. So nothing will happen today that you don't allow to happen, and that is true. Now, having said that, out of all the regressions I've done, I've only had one client once who chose to open their eyes. Everyone else has seen it through to the very end.
Let's talk about some work that you've done about Edgar Cayce and how this ties into what you've been doing. One of our favorites, Edgar Cayce.
For listeners who may not be familiar with the name, Edgar Cayce, who's now back in spirit, is regarded by many people as one of the greatest psychic mediums to ever live. Late in Casey's career, after he had already read for thousands and thousands of people, he was visited by two wealthy women, sisters from New York City. And the two sisters said to him, "Mr. Cayce, we are at the end of our rope in regard to our brother. He lives under a bridge in New York. He drinks too much. We come from a wealthy family, but he long ago squandered his share of the family fortune. Over the years, we've tried everything we can to help him turn his life around, and nothing has worked. Mr. Cayce, can you tell us anything that will help us help our brother?" Upon hearing this, Cayce did what he always did, which is he accessed the Akashic Record, which is the complete non-physical record of every word, thought, and action relevant to the earth plane, including the pre-birth planning.
In his trance state.
In his trance state, yeah. That's right. And then he said to the sisters, "Your brother is the single most highly evolved soul about whom I have ever obtained information. And the three of you planned together before any of you were born for him to do exactly what he's been doing so that the two of you could learn to be more compassionate."
Huh.
Well, that wasn't exactly the response these two women were hoping
no,
for.
No, they didn't want that, did they?
They weren't looking for that. But this is how it works. The three of them got together before birth. The two women said to him, "We would like to deepen in the divine virtue of compassion." And then that together they came up with this plan in which he would be homeless, alcoholic, squander his share of the family fortune. They would make unsuccessful efforts to help him turn his life around, all for the higher purpose of developing compassion. And this is how it works on the earth plane. What we see going on the surface level is often very, very different than what is actually going on underneath.
That's intriguing. Now, when the spirit level was created, way before the physical realm, what was the design and the plan of a soul? I mean, can we have a human being body? Can we exist without having a soul?
I don't believe that that is possible, because as I understand it, it's the soul which energizes and maintains the physical body. So it's not correct, in other words, to say that each of us has a soul. It would be more correct to say that each one of us is a soul. And the soul has the etheric bodies, which, although non-physical, are on the exterior of the physical body. Starting from the physical body, moving outward, you then have the emotional body, the mental body, and the spiritual body. When the physical body dies, the three non-physical bodies return to the other side, so to speak. So it's those non-physical or etheric bodies which energize and maintain the physical body while we're here, and it's the soul that is doing that.
So in your opinion, then, without the soul, there's no physical body.
That's what I believe, yes.
Now, what's the tie-in with the soul and planning your future with your own pets? That's interesting. A lot of pet lovers listening to this show, Rob.
Planning with pets, George?
Yeah.
Yes, there is an entire chapter on your soul's gift about the pre-birth planning we do with our pets. It's a very touching story. It's a woman, Marcia, who plans for reasons of her own before she comes into body to be a dwarf. In this lifetime, she's 4 feet, 8 inches tall. And she foresees in her pre-birth planning session, through talking with her guides, that there will be a lot of rejection from other people, particularly from other children when she's in school. To buffer that experience, she plans to have a number of unconditionally loving pets throughout the course of her lifetime, and particularly when she's a young child.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. So the pets actually come into Marcia's pre-birth planning session, and we hear them talking with her about the unconditional love that they're going to provide to her so that she can get through this very challenging experience, learn what she wants to learn, and not be completely overwhelmed by it. So future dogs, future cats, come into the planning session, a future horse comes in. There's even a rooster named Crooked Bean who comes in. And I put the words from these conversations verbatim into Your Soul's Gift. When you see the language that is used, the level of love, the intensity of love from these future pets of Marsha's, it's really very touching. And we understand that our pets at the soul level are much more than they seem to be here, just as we are.
You know, with your pet souls, have they, this is going to be a strange question, but have some human soul, I guess, can you say that? Human souls versus pet souls, or are they all the same?
You know, George, I am not an expert on pet souls. There is some thinking that pet souls are group souls, meaning they're not individuated or individually expressed the way human souls are. I've not researched that, so I can't really comment on it myself. But what I do see in the between lives regressions is that, yes, in fact, the souls of pets are eternal and divine beings, just as humans are. And we're all there in the non-physical realm before we come into body, talking about what we want to experience here, what kind of challenges will foster our expansion at the soul level. And pets are an integral part of that.
Now, I've seen some souls of pets, I guess, have been more perfected than humans sometimes, Rob.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, George, because I think many people have had the experience of having, for example, a dog that is more unconditionally loving toward them than many and perhaps all of the other people in their life. So this is what I've seen in my work as well and in the pets chapter for Your Soul's Gift, that the souls of pets are tremendously, tremendously unconditionally loving. And this is why, one reason why we invite them to be part of our pre-birth planning, because we will need the unconditional love they provide because it's hard to find elsewhere.
Can your soul split in that? Can it be in two people at the same time?
My understanding is that that is possible, that it's quite rare, but that it is done from time to time. Now, why would a soul do that? Well, one main reason for doing that is if a soul wants to be of service and have a particularly strong energetic impact on the world, what it could do is put part of its energy in a person who will be in one place on Earth, part of its energy in a person who will be at the other far corner of the globe. And this would be one way of creating a larger energetic impact, not just because there are two people, but also because generally they would be stationed in very different portions of the world, so that energetically the impact is spread out over the entire planet.
Favorite part of the work you've done over your career, what is that?
I think it would be the reaction I get from clients after they do a between lives regression. And they will say things like, you know, every single question I've had about my life was just answered by the Council of Elders. Or they will say, I had no idea that that's who I really am. And when they say that, what they're talking about is they were shown energetically, visually, and through feeling, which is really the language of the soul, who they are when they're not in body. So it completely changes their self-perception, their understanding of who they are.
You had said earlier that we're in a soul group and that, you know, somebody who had killed you might be in that group. Is there any way to get rid of that kind of a soul, or are you stuck with it?
Well, I think that when you are in the non-physical realm, you would probably not look at it that way. And in fact, you might actually have just the opposite reaction. You would be more likely, believe it or not, to be grateful to that soul for the experience that was provided. And they would be grateful to you for the experience you provided to them. Again, at the level of the soul, we are very acutely aware that nobody is permanently harmed by anything that happens here. And yet the wisdom that comes out of every experience we have, including being a murderer or being murdered, becomes part of our soul literally for all eternity. So when you look at it from that perspective, rather than feeling that you want to get rid of this person who murdered you in another lifetime, you would much more likely feel some gratitude toward them for the experience.
Rob, what happens to the soul of, let's say, a newborn who dies so fast, so quickly? I mean, never even gave the soul a chance to perfect and grow. What happens there?
As I understand it, George, what is generally happening in an instance like that is that the soul coming in as the infant or the child who's not here for very long is usually a very, very highly evolved soul coming in at the request of the parents who want to have this extraordinarily difficult experience because it will serve their growth. So it's a form of service on the part of that soul for the parents. Now, you would ask, of course, why would anyone want to have the experience of being a parent who loses an infant or a child? There could be many, many reasons for that. Again, a lot of the planning comes back to the soul's desire to cultivate qualities, which I call divine virtues, that are important to the soul. And you can easily list off the qualities that could come out of a painful experience like that. You would deepen in compassion, empathy, unconditional love. It's an experience which breaks the heart open, which is a very painful way to learn, but it's also quite a profound way to learn. And this is something that those souls are seeking through that experience.
Can that evil, I guess you could say that, evil soul, can it truly become perfected eventually where it doesn't kill or maim or do anything like that?
I actually don't believe in the concept of evil per se, and I'll tell you why. When you talk about a soul or a being evil, to me that implies that that is that soul's nature, which implies that it can't be changed. And what I see in my work is that that is not true. There are souls who do what we would call evil acts while they're here in body. Many of them have completely forgotten who they are at the soul level, and many of them have actually deviated quite a bit from the pre-birth plan. But every single being, literally, as I understand it, has the spark of God, the spark of divine within their heart. It may be very small, it may be something they're completely unaware of, but it's there. And so over a period of hundreds, perhaps even thousands of lifetimes, sooner or later, the being who commits evil acts will become aware once again of the divine spark within and return toward light. It may take a very long time, but as I understand it, it happens in every case.
And when you say a long time, it may be many reincarnated versions?
Many, many, hundreds, sometimes even thousands.
Oh, my gosh. I really wonder if there's ever any of them that just don't get it and get there.
Well, remember, we come from a realm in which there is no time. There's literally no time. So we have all eternity to, quote-unquote, get it. And when you have all eternity to do something, sooner or later you
something's going to happen. Okay, stick with us. Rob Schwartz with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls. If you've gone through a past life regression, share that story with us too. His books, Your Soul's Plan, Your Soul's Gift, those are two separate books. And his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be right back to take your calls. Don't go away.